You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in not-so-sunny Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, or indeed in the clouds, because it's misty, it's rainy, it's clouding over very early, nights are cold, cold for Bogota. For those of you elsewhere, you'll guffaw at what I'm saying, but it's a few degrees above zero in the nights here at the moment, and drizzle in the morning, which is unusual because, of course, we have normally at this altitude nice, crisp, clear, sunny days, and then around midday, 1 o'clock, the skies bruise and the afternoons are damaged. But no, at the moment it's drizzly and rainy in the morning, and we are in the month of June, the month with three puentes. Puentes, for those of you who are not aware, are long weekends or bank holidays. That's three in 1 month. That means there's only one weekend without a bank holiday. Why are there so many bank holidays? Well, not only for Catholicism, this most recent one has been for Corpus Christi, but the truth is that most people here in Colombia work in a contractual form that's called prestación de servicios, which means they get no holidays. So, of course, these puentes are incredibly important to people on this type of work contract, and that it does seem to be a vast number of the workforce out there. A couple of points of interest. I've been getting a few emails from some of you out there, and even as far adrift as Holland, asking about the music that to the intro of this show. Well, it's Toto La Momposina and her song El Pescador. She is a great singer, still alive today, tours the world, very famous, who is from the Mompos Depression. She's not actually from Mompos, she's from a town called Talaigua. Now, Talaigua is close to Mompos, about half an hour away, where my hotel is, but Talaigua is divided into two towns, Nueva and Vieja, and she's from Talaigua Vieja, but I suppose Toto La Talaiguera doesn't quite go as well as Toto La Momposina. Anyway, so for those of you out there wondering what the song is, it's Toto La Momposina El Pescador. And we're going to go into the next section of the show very shortly, and I just want to give you a heads up about the subject matter, because I'm very, I'm actually very pleased with this show, because it's highlighting something that's of, something that's little known here, and perhaps by people out there. The interviewee is Alex Westendorf, who was adopted from Colombia as a young boy and adopted by, obviously, kindly folk in the United States in Waverly, Iowa. And yes, he grew up there, but has been back recently trying to trace his roots and find out a little bit about his identity. So the whole show is revolving around him, Alex Westendorf, and talking about how he found Colombia as a, let's say, part of the Colombian diaspora, but really not knowing his identity. Before I close this section of the show, I just want to say that my heart and thoughts go out to the family of Jan Brownish, the Swede who in May 2013 tried to cross the Darien Gap, that famed strip of land where there is no no formal crossing between Panama and Colombia, the only part of the Panamericana Highway, which is unbuilt. It's a solid, dense jungle, and of course, run by bandits, guerrillas, and whomever. Anyway, Jan Brownich, the FARC guerrillas have admitted to having killed him in 2013. A shot to the head, it seems. The International Committee of the Red Cross recovered his body last week in the outskirts of an indigenous, secluded indigenous village somewhere in that area, upriver from Rio Sucio. So please don't try and do that. And yes, he was an adventurer, adventurer and a risk taker, and he was out of his depth. And the FARC stopped the boat that he was going on upriver into Panama, took him off the boat, allegedly, found a GPS in his backpack and thought him to be a spy. He was then executed and buried in a shallow grave. The body has been exhumed, and I believe it is now either on its way back to Sweden to his loved ones or already back in Sweden. So my thoughts go out to his family and friends. And how low does this conflict have to go that a backpacker is part of, you know, one of the victims? It's brings it close to home. Those of you out there listening to this thinking of traveling in Colombia, it brings it close to home that Colombia still has a justifiably dangerous reputation. Anyway, without further ado, we're going to stop here and take a short break, and we'll be right back with Alex Westendorf. Please, of course, get in touch. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com, website Columbia Calling Radio, Twitter Columbia Calling, Facebook Columbia Calling. You can find all of our details there, and we're going to take this short break. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. I'm here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And I'm talking to a very special guest, Alex Westendorf, who's way up there in Waverly, Iowa. This might be the first. No, actually, I've spoken to someone in Australia, so you're not the furthest away. But Alex, welcome on the show. You are. I mean, your story is incredible, and that's why you're on the show. But first, I want to ask you, you know, it's like, can you share with us, share with the listeners out there, how you got in touch with Columbia Calling?
I decided to go to Columbia back in April. And so I kind of wanted to know more about Columbia, and I happened to do a search on podcasts and found your podcast and listened to it, and I learned a lot about Columbia through your podcast, and I heard a story about adoption story, and that really hit close to home. So I just emailed you and said, hey, I mean, I really appreciated your podcast.
Now, did I send you the email that Marcela Mariscal, the interview in question that you're speaking of, did I send you her response? I can't remember.
I think so, yes.
Oh, well, anyway, it made her day. I have to say that right now. She, you know, I got your email and I forwarded it on to her because, of course, it's her story, you know, the one that she, you know, helped this lady from, I think she was from Arizona, really, who was of Colombian descent, who had actually been stolen as a child and given up for adoption. But your story is different, but we're going to start with a little bit of background about Alex Westendorf. Now, you're in Waverly, Iowa. That's the eastern side of Iowa, closer to, as you say, Illinois and Minnesota. Just paint the picture. If you're looking out of your window right now, because I imagine a lot of my listeners aren't going to have been to Iowa. So what is your surrounding there? What does the environment look like in Iowa?
Well, if you're in most towns in Iowa, you know, it's pretty much like a, you know, rural town. If you pretty much drive out of town, you'll just see cornfields and bean fields everywhere. That's pretty much how you can pretty much explain Iowa.
Okay, so flat and full of corn.
Yes.
But you've got
corn and beans.
Okay, very good, very good. Now, and what do you do, Alex, in Iowa? What is your profession?
I am self-employed.
Okay, very good, very good. Now the reason that you got in touch, of course, as you said, is it, you know, the interview with Marcela Mariscal, you know, it sort of, let's say, it touched not a nerve, but it came close to home, is that you were adopted from Colombia way back in the 1980s. But, you know, your story is a mystery, really. So, you know, how is it? Because I mean, we've been talking, you know, in preparation for this chat. But the more that you come up with, the more befuddled and confused I am with you know, this story. You sent me a newspaper cutting, which has a name on it, and saying that at 7 months you were, I guess, abandoned in Bogota. I assume you were abandoned in Bogota, and then I guess you moved around from orphanage to orphanage, and then were adopted. And your life is now in Iowa. But tell us about this past. What you know of it?
I mean, I'm just really confused about the article. When I actually went down there, the only thing I had connecting myself to that article was in my adoption papers. and which my parents gave to me when I told them that I wanted to go down to Colombia, and they were more than happy for me to go. And so when I was going through the adoption papers, I saw this article with a certain date on it. I was like, okay, I'm going to go down there. That was one of my goals, was to go down there and find that newspaper article. And just basically expecting to see my face when I was younger. And when I saw this newspaper article, I'm like, ooh, what's going on?
But we don't even know if it is you in the photo.
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten different stories. ICBF says it's not related to my case. The adoption agency, UDMA, told me it's not, you know, it's just a standard practice that ICBF does, is, you know, just, you know, to fulfill the law. They'll just to let the parents know that they're, you know, they're going to put the kids up for adoption, but, you know, basically makes it impossible for them to find their kids because it's, you know, they don't actually put their kids' names down, but a different other person's identity. So, and then I wanted, also went to the welfare office and talked to a couple people there, and they said, you know, this is you, this is your case. And so I'm kind of confused.
Well, sure. Let me just clarify for the people out there. The ICBF is the Instituto Colombiano de Bienestar Familiar, which is essentially the Colombian Institute for Family Welfare. I don't know what that would be in the U.S., but anyway, they are the ones in charge of all of these, you know, adoptions and things of this nature. And of course, but so, I mean, you came down to Colombia in April of this year, so very recently. Unfortunately, we couldn't meet because it was the week of my son's birth, but you came down to explore this. I mean, what were your concerns? Did you have any concerns about coming down here to Colombia to investigate your roots?
You know, I really, I did my research before I went down. You know, I read, and, you know, I basically found out that, you know, it's a lot better than it was when my parents came down there. So I felt pretty comfortable. And not concerned about the safety. You know, the only thing really that I was really concerned about was maybe the taxis.
Yeah, I can understand that.
You know, and it's like, that's about the only thing. But, you know, I just felt comfortable and I was, you know, had no concerns really.
So you came down here, let's say, with the information provided by your parents in the adoption papers, but the adoption agency in the U.S. Through whom your parents worked is now closed.
Yeah, they went out. Yeah, they basically closed about 10 years ago. So I couldn't use them for contacts.
It's just amazing. It's just, you know, it seems like every door was almost closed to you. I mean, there was such a prevention to you even looking into the official documentation that might reveal something about your past.
Exactly.
So, but your parents had the adoption papers, and these adoption, I've never seen adoption papers, but these adoption papers just say where you were adopted from, I assume.
Yeah, they give a basically a lot of it's legal, but a lot of it, you know, some of it gives you a little brief background of your case. In my situation, in the adoption papers, it just said that, you know, I was found on the streets. Some lady found me, brought me to the police station. And then from there, I was put in the ICBF Adoption Institute. I think I was there based on the newspaper, adoption papers. I was there for about 2 years, and then from there I went to an orphanage called La Maria, and then I was basically in the system to be adopted, and then I went to a gentleman's house for 6 months. My parents told me I went there because I wasn't around male figures, and so they wanted me to be comfortable around my dad, my adopted dad, when we eventually met.
Tell me something. You know, was there any way of you contacting this gentleman whose house you were in for 6 months?
Well, that was one of my goals, was to go down there and see if I could meet him. But I actually went to his house. What I remember of his place is, you know, those little buses that are everywhere.
In yes.
And, you know, that was one of my things was like, I mean, I still have, I have a little bus that I painted, helped paint, you know, I'm assuming he produced those. And so that's one of my connections, you know? And so I kind of wanted to go down there and visit him. I just had no way of getting to him. I found out that the place that they make the makes those buses are pretty far away from Bogota.
Okay. But so you couldn't trace this man or anything. I mean, this has got to be a disappointment.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now let's change the subject a little bit. You know, we've got a five six minutes of this first section to go. Let's talk your parents. I mean, your Iowa parents. How did they come about deciding to choose to adopt a child from Colombia?
My mom here, she couldn't have any more kids after her first birth, and my dad and her wanted have more kids, so they decided to adopt. And then the adoption agency basically said, you know, we have a kid in Colombia, and are you interested? And they said yes. What they told me was that they were expecting a kid that was just around 3 or 4, and when they got down there, they basically said, we got the papers messed up, and here's a 7-year-old. And if you don't take him, he's basically going to go on the streets.
Wow, that's a real emotional blackmail that your parents were presented with.
Yeah, and they said that they, you know, it was meant to be, so they, you know, that they had no problems going through the adoption.
Wow, and how was your, let's say, adaptation to life in Iowa after Bogota?
I mean, it was really, remember being, you know, eager to go. I was really excited. My learning English was fairly quick. I think within a year, I learned English really good, and I lost my Spanish really fast, which concerned my parents because they wanted me to keep my Spanish, but they said I refused to speak Spanish after I learned English.
I've heard this. I've guided some people here in Colombia. In fact, a German lady who grew up in Colombia, but she then adopted a brother and sister here. And I've heard that as soon as the children sort of understood the situation, understood that they'd been adopted, that they'd been given up for adoption, it was a complete rejection of their past, and therefore no Spanish whatsoever, and they only spoke German from then on in. And they had to force them to try and speak Spanish to get in touch with their culture.
Yeah, they actually hired a Spanish translator or a tutor to help me keep my Spanish, but I basically just refused.
So it was an outright rejection of it all. Wow. It is emotional stuff, but you were eager to go, of course. I mean, eager, I guess, for the stability of a home, you know, a stability of not moving from place to place.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't remember much of my early years, but I mean, I do remember just not wanting to keep my Spanish and just try and just basically assimilate to the culture.
Right. And in Iowa back in 1987, were there many other children of Latino descent up there in Waverly?
No.
are there now? You know, because I couldn't tell you. I wouldn't know. I imagine farmhands and other people. I'm sure because the U.S. is remarkably multicultural, so probably.
Iowa is, you know, it's a lot more diverse than it was. When I went to school, I mean, it's a little bit more, but it's still not nearly, you know, we're in Iowa.
Yeah. We're not going to lie. It's still Iowa.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. Well, let's not speak ill of Iowa because Iowa's been very good to you as well.
It's a great place.
Now, you're fully settled in Iowa. You are a U.S. citizen. You no longer speak Spanish. You have three daughters. You're married. I mean, you're part of the fabric of Iowa now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so you're not going anywhere. I mean, you
know. Oh no. Yeah, I mean, I built a good life here. My parents gave me a lot, you know, and it's, you know, they gave me so much.
Yeah.
So I'm, you know, I can't, you know, thank them enough for what they did for me.
Okay. I think it's a fantastic story, this. I think it is. We're gonna go into a short break in a second. Just the listeners out there, we're talking to Alex Westendorf, who's originally from Colombia, Bogota, Colombia. He was abandoned at age 7 months on the street in Bogota, and then adopted. This was back in sort of 1980. It says on this piece of paper 1985, right? 1985 or 19? Who knows? Because we don't know if the dates are right. I mean, as you say, we can't even know your birthdays. But anyway, we're talking to Alex up in Iowa, and we're talking about his life and how he came to be in Iowa and you know, his exploration of his roots. And this is a story that is not unique in Colombia. And every day, Alex, I have to share with you this, every day on the national news, there is some sort of news of a baby being abandoned in southern Bogota or western Bogota or central Bogota. It happens a lot. So, you know, the situation is in place that people, you know, for some reason or another, feel that it would be better for them to give up their children. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. If you want to get in touch, that's columbiacalling@gmail.com, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, and our website is columbiacallingradio.com. Don't go away, because we'll be right back with Alex Westendorf after this short break. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling, and I'm talking to Alex Westendorf up in Waverly, Iowa. We've been talking about his past, because Alex's past, while an incredible story, is not unique in here in Colombia, and I'm sure certain other places around the world. But Alex was abandoned at age 7 months in the street in Bogota, then given up to the welfare institute here in Colombia. He spent time between, I guess, different orphanages before age 7 being adopted by a family, I guess the Westendorf family, up there in Iowa. And now he's made a life for himself up there. But as everyone, you know, even, you know, adoptees or not, you want to know your identity. You want to know where you're from. And Alex recently, April of 2015, came down to Bogota to investigate a bit his past. But, you know, Alex, as you've mentioned previously, it really wasn't straightforward. I mean, it's not the sort of, just go into the National Archives and find the right document and uncover your past. It was a lot more complex, right?
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit. I mean, you came down, you couldn't find the gentleman with whom you lived for 6 months to try and, you know, did you end up visiting the orphanage La Maria, which you mentioned to me that you'd been in for a while as well?
Yeah, I mean, those are my most vivid memories of Colombia, was the orphanage. I mean, I don't know if it's called La Maria, if that's actually where I stayed at. You know, I just know that, I mean, I was raised by nuns. So I'm pretty sure it was a Catholic institution. And I just remember that was a big building with, you know, different colors, which I kind of think it's based on age group. And that's pretty much my memory of the orphanage. And so I was that really wanted to visit that orphanage to kind of just see if my memories were true or not.
But you couldn't find it. No one knew where it was.
Yeah, nobody knew of a La Maria orphanage.
So I ask you then, you know, where did the name La Maria come from? Is it on your adoption papers?
Exactly. It was just, that's what I saw. So that's what I told everybody. It's like, this is what was on my adoption papers.
Now, when we close down this interview, I'm going to do a search for it online and so on. I'm going to look and see if I can find a La Maria. But if it doesn't exist, it sounds like they, you know, they were covering their tracks so that, you know, you couldn't be, let's say, returned like faulty merchandise.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, it just sounds like, oh, you know, it's just because La Maria is, you know, like it's such a sort of general name.
Yeah, I mean, they even they even made up a name for me. I mean, it's just like my name on my official papers was called Alex Nino.
Alex Nino, right.
You know, it's just like a John Doe name.
Yeah, Alex Boy.
Exactly. So, which, you know, I, you know, and not even you know, not knowing your birth date is also just, you know, always bothered me a little. It's always bothered me.
I'm sure it has. And of course, then we're looking at this newspaper article again that you sent. And it says Fernando Alfonso Gamarra, and we know that's not your name. Well, we think it's not your name, and we're pretty sure. But your other name is Alex Nino. And I mean, this surely do you have struggles for this understanding of your identity?
Yeah, you know it is. Of course it is. You know.
Yeah.
You know, like I was told that, you know, I basically was, they created a new birth certificate for me. You know. The birthday that I was given was based on a doctor looking at my teeth. And so that's basically how I got my birthday. Just like, well, yeah, you're April 1980. That's going to be your birthday based on, I guess, on a doctor looking at my teeth.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's almost heartbreaking to think, you know, and I'm sure this still goes on, but it's heartbreaking to think that it went on. Now, I have another friend who was adopted. I went to high school, believe it or not, in New Jersey for a year. And I had a friend, Karen, who grew up there, and she had been adopted, I guess, back around the same sort of time, maybe a little bit earlier. And she got in touch with me. She's now living in Colorado, of all places. But she got in touch with me out of the blue. I hadn't spoken to her since 1996 when I was at high school. It was alerted to her that I was in Colombia. And I just, you know, this side anecdote. But anyway, she wrote me an email and explained her situation, having been adopted from Bogota. And on the adoption papers, there is, you know, little information as well. I mean, you know, very little information.
Mm-hmm.
And she has two children and wants to come down and trace her roots a little bit. But it's, you know, when she asked her adoptive parents, who are, I think, native New Yorkers, well, you know, the only parents she's known, so her parents, says, you know, but where is that, how did this come about? And the parents said, well, no, we signed some papers, paid the visas or whatever they had to pay in 1980, and a man arrived on an airplane into New York with you and handed you over at the airport. I mean, it just,
wow.
It's almost terrifying, you know. Although I was able to find the orphanage, you know, that she had been in, but it wasn't La Maria, unfortunately. So otherwise I would have. But you know, these stories come out. So you know, there may be hope for you. There may be hope. Would you? I mean, I know these questions sound trite, maybe, you know, irrelevant, but I know that the listeners out there are begging me to ask. It's like, you know, did you hope to find your birth parents, or do you hope to find your birth parents in the future down here in Colombia?
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm assuming it's every adopted person's dream. And of course it's mine, but based on the information and what my parents told me, you know, I always just thought that's unrealistic. So the best thing when I decided to come down to Colombia was just to find out as much as I could surrounding me.
Yeah, and but I mean, you know, it's bizarre because, yeah. Now, the story that we did before with Marcela Mariscal and the adoption, of course, there was a, you know, they did a TV appearance, you know, requesting anyone who might recognize this lady, and she was coming to the end of her stay, I know. And she was spotted by, I guess it was a cousin or a brother, but who's living in Venezuela, who then called back to the family and said, you know, she's igualita, she's exactly the same as her sister, etc. But this lady's memory was, she was standing by a lady in a long black dress in a park. I mean, that was her knowledge of Colombia.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you have more paperwork in place than she did, so I don't think it's impossible. Anything's possible here in Colombia.
Well, see, I talked when I had my meeting with a UNIME director, and I said, hey, you know, could I go to El Tempo and, you know, give him my picture when I was younger and a picture of me now? And she said, that's not possible. It's a taboo thing.
I think that just sounds like it's sort of brushing you off a little bit. You know, you can always approach these people, and you know, and Colombians, as you witnessed and experienced in your trip down here, are incredibly warm and incredibly, you know, familiar. The family is everything. Had someone recognized the photo, they would have come forward. So it's just, I mean, this story. So, you know, so we're talking about this and we're talking, trying to get my head round it at times is so difficult. And of course, I don't understand. I don't come from a background similar to yours, but let's ask you now. You came down, you spoke to the Instituto, the Colombiano de Bienestar Familiar. You spoke to, what you're saying, you spoke to Ayúdame, the agency. Who else did you meet with when you were down here?
That's pretty much it. I was only really down there for about 4 days, so I didn't have them all the time in the world, you know, have a business to run.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's not a long time to try and do paperwork in Colombia.
Yeah. And I did some sightseeing, you know, because I was basically waiting for appointments to show up. I mean, I was using a translator that I got in contact through the local college here, and she was helping me basically get contacts to find the adopter, to make an appointment with the adoption agency and ICBF.
And did you find them to be good on their word about appointments, or were they very unpunctual, or did they always change the appointments?
No, it was actually, you know, really good. I mean, it was, I was happy. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised.
for the time frame that I had, I'm really surprised I even got an appointment at all.
So, okay, so you came down, and you were in the National Archives as well. What did you hope to find there?
I was basically, when I went down there, I just was expecting to see my picture when I was younger. And when I saw that picture that you saw, that I emailed you, it just threw me for a loop.
Wow. And they have in there in the archives, they have a record of all of these, let's say, these, it's almost like an advertisement up for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
They have records like this, or this, but this was actually the newspaper. This was the newspaper archives in the National Archives. Okay, so but you didn't find, there was nothing else that you could find. It was just this.
That was pretty much mostly what I found.
It's just amazing. It really is amazing. Now, you know, I mean, we don't know if, because on this paper it says that you were left at Fernando Barrera's house and his wife Alicia Ortiz. These are names that could be, you know, there could be 300 of each of these names, if not more, if not 100, 100 more, 400 more, 500 more of these names. These are not uncommon names, the ones Fernando Barrera and Alicia Ortiz here in Bogota. So it's tough, you know, it's tough. It's almost like, I like to sort of say we're looking for the smoking gun to try and link you to something, but it's just difficult, huh?
Yeah, I asked ICBF, I'm like, what? I mean, I asked them for an explanation about this article. I'm like, you are the ones that requested this article. You know, you're the ones that put it out there, told the newspaper what to put it in. And they're just, you know, just like, well, it's not based on your case. So I really haven't got a good explanation why that's not me. Why would they put that in there for?
They didn't tell you at all why they would do this. It's for your security, security of the family.
Said it's not related to my case.
Wow, they did really. I mean, they really sort of just cut you off on that, right?
Basically, so I'm, you know, kind of. Frustrated on that point.
I bet you are. I bet you're frustrated on this. Now, so I'm going to look up the adoption agency. Ayúdame, help me. I'm going to look this up as well and see what I can find about them, because I find it so difficult to understand. Now we are. Sorry.
They did give me my case. I mean, I did. I had to put a formal request for my case file, and I just got that last week.
Oh.
It has most of my adoption papers, but then it also has some more information about me that I didn't see before. But of course, it's all in Spanish, so.
Oh, so you can't share that with me because we don't know.
I mean, it's in Spanish, so I mean, it's really hard to translate because I don't know Spanish.
and you haven't had anyone. You haven't had anyone translate it yet.
Not yet. So I'm just. You know, I'm trying to translate it myself.
But give us an idea of what has been included and what you've translated.
I mean, I found out that I had, when they found me, I had a fractured right arm. Looked like I was in pretty bad shape when they found me, basically what I've gathered out of the information.
Wow. A fractured right arm. You're probably in a state of malnutrition as well.
Based on what I saw, yeah. I mean, I saw a picture of me, and it just looked like I was a ragged mess.
Wow. So it had there's an image there too.
Yeah, but it's in black and white. But from what I gathered, man, it was just, yeah. I was like, wow, you were looking very great when they found you.
Just breaks your heart. It just breaks your heart. And are there any addresses or names on that document?
Nothing that I really saw. But I mean, again, it's on Spanish.
Yeah, this is true. I mean, because I mean, that could be the potential link to try and, you know, to dig further. But I mean, you were abandoned, young. There's a grainy black and white photograph showing you this, you know, almost like a Raggedy Ann doll, I guess. I mean,
the name that the lady that they have a name of the lady that found me, but the ICBF director told me that there's nobody registered at all in Bogota with that name. So I'm like, okay.
Very strange. That's fishy to me. I don't know.
And then I was told that's very, very uncommon that they would not have somebody's contact when they would take you to the police station. I heard that was very unusual.
Well, yeah, because if she took you to the police station and she did it formally, they would have taken her details. And everybody has to carry ID here. I mean, all the time. They would have taken all of this. They would have demanded it of her. So, I mean, it sounds to me like she left you on the step of the police station. That's the sort of best case scenario. Or there's another cover-up.
Exactly.
Wow, I mean, this is almost like a spy story unraveling here, except we don't know where to go next.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I hope to go down there again, but I mean, definitely I want to find that gentleman that I stayed for 6 months, and the orphanage is something I really want to find out.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that about coming down again. I mean, you've got this frustration, but about not perhaps getting as far as you would have liked. Of course, you are eager to come back and do some further investigation.
Yeah, I mean, when I was down there, I mean, I really did enjoy my time. I got to see, you know, the salt mines, and I got to see Montserrat, you know, and actually got to see the city, and I mean, it was really enjoyable.
Sure. And where did you stay when you were here in Bogota?
I stayed Elster Windsor House.
Okay, so very nice.
Yeah, it was really kind of, it was really business district, I think.
Yeah.
But it was a really nice area, but was realistic that, you know, I was in probably the best part of Bogota.
Yeah, this is true. And how did your wife find it? Your wife is originally from Iowa. She's American or else from elsewhere?
Yeah, she's originally from Iowa. So.
Okay, and how did she find out? I mean, that's a big change too.
Yeah, she, she liked it, but the food, she wasn't really into the food at all. So she was, you know, we had to go to McDonald's and stuff like that. And,
oh, no,
but
no.
We had a gentleman, our taxi driver. We really got close to our taxi driver. And of course, he didn't speak English, but I basically communicated with him on my phone through Google Translate. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much when I talked to anybody, I pretty much had to use my phone to talk to people.
And he was like almost like your escort around Bogota.
He was my escort, and we really, you know, ended up becoming friends. And yeah, he basically held my hand. He's the one that took me to the, you know, the welfare office and the ICBF headquarters. He was a big help.
This is an amazing story. This is a good story about, you know, Colombian openness and friendliness, you know?
Yeah, between the translator, you know, it wasn't her job. She was her job was to place students in colleges across the world. And it wasn't her job. She didn't have to do any of this, but she was more than happy to help me as much as she could.
Fantastic. So next time you come down, give me some warning, and we'll do some further digging as well, so we make sure that we can get more information for you, because it must exist somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a birth certificate out there, but there's just no way of finding that birth certificate, the information you don't have anywhere to go from.
Yeah, I mean, you know, without knowing, you know, okay, so you apparently, I mean, without knowing exactly which police station you were handed into, you know, that would suggest you were from that area, which would suggest you were perhaps born in a hospital nearby, which would then open the opportunity to get into one of the notaria law offices, which would let them look, they would then let you look through their archives there. But I mean, you know, in 1980, let's say 1982, 1983, there would have been fewer of these notaria offices. You know, it would narrow it down, but equally, without knowing your proper name, you know,
exactly,
it's, I mean, there's a whole sort of process that needs to be got through here first, and you know, the hook that you're just missing is it's tiny, really. It's I think it's just that one man, isn't it, the gentleman with whom you lived for 6 months, and he would be able to hopefully shed some light on further information. And of course the orphanage should have papers somewhere, but I mean, this is Colombia. As they say, todo es posible, nada es seguro. Everything's possible, nothing's certain, you know.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, please, I'm giving a call out to anyone out there who has, you know, perhaps knowledge of this kind of issue and this kind of story, to please get in touch with us so that we can point maybe Alex Westendorf more in the right direction. You know, maybe we can just give him a bit more of a boost towards finding out a little bit more about his past. I mean, you know, I'm looking at this picture of a child, possibly you, in the newspaper, and you're being held, I mean, the child in the newspaper is being held up. You can see their hands by the side, but there's no way of seeing any distinguishing marks or rings or jewelry. There's nothing in the background to suggest where you are. I mean, it's, you know, we can consider ourselves all amateur CSIs, but it's really tough.
Yeah, I mean, and then on top of that, when I went down to Colombia, I mean, I didn't even look like anybody down there. And so that was another frustrating thing. And my parents told me that they even think that I'm in some type of indigenous Indian from there. And that's based on my teeth analysis. The dentist here said that, you know, I'm Indian.
Ah, so you're from some sort of indigenous tribe here. And that would be the same as my friend Karen as well.
I basically taken a DNA test, and hopefully I can get some results out of that too.
Oh, you've done one?
Yeah, I've literally just in the last week I've sent a DNA test to see if I can get any, you know, hopefully I can get some results out of that and at least, you know, figure out that.
If they can give you the name of the indigenous group or something, then you'll be able to narrow down a section of the city.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if just find out a little bit about me, you know.
It's fascinating. Don't lose touch. Please let us know if you want to, but let us know if, you know, once this information comes out, because maybe we can find someone who knows something about this, and maybe we can help, you know, anything that I can do here in Colombia to help you, you know, just get in touch, because the story is fascinating. And again, you're just like one step away from some really big information. I think listening to everything here, but it's got to be so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it really, I mean, I was prepared to go down there, but I mean, I don't think I was quite emotionally expecting what I was going to find. I mean, it took me about a week or two to really get my head around it.
So a question following up from that, because I didn't know that you were going to be from an indigenous background, let's say, because you didn't look like anyone, did you feel attached to the city in any way?
I mean, it's hard to explain. I mean, I found the city fascinating. I mean, it was just so big, and I was only on the north side of town, mm-hmm. and city. And, you know, I mean, I really, really liked the, I mean, I just found it. I loved the city, actually. I thought it was amazing. The people were, you know, nice, and you know, and I got to know a couple people, and so yeah, I really liked Bogota a lot.
This experience has got to be incredibly positive. You know, you're essentially, you know, a guy from Waverly, Iowa, and is searching for a past, and it's just, well, anything I can do to help. And so, listen, Alex, thank you so much for sharing some, you know, intensely personal experiences and information with us here on Columbia Calling. Thank you for your time.
Oh, no problem.
And we hope to hear from you in the future, and we hope to maybe we'll do another recording later on and somewhere down the line, you know, when you've been able to find more information about your past and we can share a good news story.
Yeah, exactly. I hope so.
Okay, so we've been talking to Alex Westendorf up in Iowa, Waverly, Iowa. We've been talking about his past, having been abandoned age 7 months in Bogota. But, of course, the Colombia element of the lack of sort of ideal paperwork and the lack of information and the lack of knowledge about these things really came to, obstruct any possibility of him finding out about his past. But he did come down here. He will be coming back, and it's been a real pleasure for us here on Columbia Calling to be listening to this and to be party to this this story, his story. Hopefully he can come back on the show at a later date and tell us some good news. As always, please get in touch if you're interested in anything or hearing about anything from Columbia, anyone you want to be interviewed. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com, and Columbia Calling Radio is our website, which you can contact us through too. We have the Facebook page, Columbia Calling, and of course we're on Twitter. On all the other social media, we'll pop up somewhere around. So I've been Richard McCall. This has been Columbia Calling. I hope you've enjoyed the show.